Buffon, and then Ronaldo! Oh! What a goal by Cristiano Ronaldo!
Messi to the near post! Messi to the net!
Mamma mia! Lionel!
Romelu Chiellini now. Here's a Honduran. He'll whip it in back to the far post. Elise! Albert Elise! La Pantanita! It's a Honduran connection!
This is Soccer Matters, brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com. Here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome into Soccer Matters here in Austin, Texas, on the Horn. A happy Martin Luther King Jr. Day to you. Show, as always, is brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. It's DaspitLawAustin.com. 512-865-6710. They are bilingual. And they bring you Soccer Matters every Monday in Austin, Texas. Your humble host here, Glenn Davis, and thank you for tuning in tonight. Also for checking out the podcast at hornfm.com. All right, tough times for Juventus and Cristiano Ronaldo over the weekend. I would say ditto for Lionel Messi in Barcelona. We will talk some Liverpool and Manchester United in the biggest sporting event on the map this past weekend in a draw that was 0-0. You can position that one how you like it, but this is a positive result for United, who now sit atop the Premier League. So interesting stuff there for Manchester United and Liverpool. We'll talk about that here tonight and some of the reasons why maybe Liverpool is sputtering a little bit. Most impressive game of the weekend for me was Inter Milan. 2-0 over Juventus, dominating performance, questions about the Juventus midfield. I would say more praise for what Inter Milan did in this game. We'll talk about that as well. Spanish Cup title goes to Athletic Bilbao, as I mentioned. A rough weekend for Lionel Messi. First time he's ever been sent off. Sent off in that game, kind of a strike to the head of an opposing player. In the 90th minute, they were winning. Only then to go on and concede a goal and lose in extra time on an eye-popping goal from Iñaki Williams. Williams opened up his hips, fired in the finish, and after creating space for himself, this thing went into the upper 90. It was like an arrow, a flaming arrow, breathtaking. Women's national team in action right now against Colombia in an international friendly. Earlier today, Arsenal with a 3-0 win over Newcastle, still struggles for Steve Bruce and Newcastle. And then Cagliari would go down to the sword of Zlatan Ibrahimovic and AC Milan 2-0 today as well. So a couple of updates. We're streaming at hornfm.com. The call-in number, as always, 512-447-3776. And appreciate everybody tuning in here tonight to talk about a number of things. We've got some Major League Soccer's talk as well on this program tonight. So we'll get into some of that as well. So let's start with Liverpool and Manchester United. I'm not sure if you watch this. I'm not sure if you get the Peacock. I'm not sure if you get Peacock Premium. But whatever, it sometimes is a challenge. All of a sudden, the biggest global game, for reasons we probably can figure out, is put on the Peacock, forcing everybody to sign up. So this highly anticipated match, it's number 1 and 2 in the Premier League, ended in a 0-0 draw. You saw it. First half that had Manchester United defending very deep. Now, I was at home sitting on my couch watching this going just, you know, how long can this go on? How long before something takes a deflection and finds the back of the net or somebody comes up with a magical moment? Yes, I know Liverpool sputtering when it comes to scoring goals coming into this game. In fact, after this, they have 1 goal in 4 games, which is pretty hard to believe. But the defending deep, I was hoping that Manchester United would find a few more moments there where they would counter that pressure with a little bit of pressure of their own just to relieve themselves a little bit. Didn't really happen. They did have a couple of breakouts where they looked pretty good on the counterattack. But for me, with all the dominant pressure and the ball possession of Liverpool, I would just say that, you know, they seemed like one pass away from it, or, you know, they'd have a guy in on the end line and They'd be playing him in. He's making a driving run for it, maybe Trent Alexander-Arnold, and the pass would just be slightly overhit from somebody. They just seem off it. Now, United had the rare counterattack in the first half, and at times it did look dangerous, but it was rare. They played it conservative, and maybe in the mindset that Liverpool had problems and have had problems breaking down deeper defending teams that are set up from the start of a game to defend deep. And let's not forget, they are without a vital part of their attack in Virgil van Dijk. Yes, I said Virgil van Dijk, vital part of their attack. His ability to hit a ball over distance, start the attack from the center back position, it's vital to what Liverpool did last year. And with teams committing players forward, his accuracy over distance, his ability to pick out Mane, Salah, Firmino over distance is ridiculous. Plus, he's a smart tight passer, too. And those passes and ability to hold the ball and decisions that he makes on the ball, whether it's a quick long ball to spring a counterattack or it's part of the buildup, it does allow Trent Alexander-Arnold and Robertson to creep higher up the field and get into the attack. But they're sputtering. They're struggling right now. Now, also don't forget, without their best defender, it also affects them a little bit tactically in how they take up defensive positions. It seems they're defending a little bit deeper now without Virgil van Dijk in the lineup. Let's also not forget, it is kind of a semi-crisis, depending on who you listen to. Again, having scored only once in four matches for Liverpool. It seemed, though, like United had seven players in and around the 18 for a majority of this match, and they were good defensively, despite inviting pressure for large periods of this game. 64 or 62% possession, I think, were the numbers for Liverpool. Might even have been more. Yeah, 66% possession for Liverpool. So, but I got to hand it to the back four for Manchester United. I thought they were excellent. They blocked tons of shots, crosses. They got in front of things. They did a wonderful job. And, you know, we're talking about Juan Bissaka. We're talking about Luke Shaw. Excellent game for Luke Shaw, who's often maligned. Harry Maguire, very solid game. Lindelof, very solid game. That back four deserves a tremendous amount of credit. Now, United had two glorious chances in the second half. Luke Shaw cutting it back to Bruno Fernandes. You thought he was going to take that one. And then Paul Pogba, who got a clear chance from an angle. And he just crashed his shot right at Alisson. I thought Pogba and Fred became better in the second half. Had partially to do with some increased pressure that they would then get on Liverpool. Now back to Liverpool. They played with Jordan Henderson and Fabinho at the center back position, and then you saw Shaqiri get a rare start. COVID, I don't know what it is. And it could be a combination of things. COVID, lack of creativity out of midfield has been something. Lack of sharpness from the front three. We talked about Mane, Firmino, and Salah. No Virgil van Dijk. Thiago has missed a ton of games, who, by the way, is a phenomenal player. But whatever reason you pick out, if you're a Liverpool fan, they're still going to be there in the end for me. The players, again, that I focus on for United, the back four. Shaw, Maguire, Lindelof, Bissaka. Warriors, focused, intense, got in front of stuff. Tremendous job at defending. Marcus Rashford, yeah, a lot of effort. I think his decision-making lacked. I think there was a real critical moment that might have won him the game where after Edinson Cavani had come on, he made a great run to the left of Rashford. And Rashford then would take the ball across the backs and back, you know, in an angle across the penalty box and would ultimately never get a shot off. I really thought he should have played in Cavani. He missed him. By the numbers and by the stats, here's what it looked like. It was Liverpool 66% possession, United 34% possession, Liverpool 17 shots, 3 on goal, Manchester United only 8 shots, 4 on goal, but 2 of those 4 really clear chances. Corners 7-3 in favor of Liverpool. So pretty interesting stuff there in that one. And, well, right now Manchester United still sits atop of the Premier League. And we'll take a look at some of the title races here in this first segment as well, because we've got races in La Liga, Serie A, and the Premier League that are really making it interesting. It's not two teams running away with it. So that segues me now into Inter Milan. 2-0 over Juventus. So Inter Milan, this was my favorite game of the weekend, quite frankly. I thought it was going to be the Liverpool-Manchester United game, but it was Inter Milan and Juventus. Inter Milan played wonderfully in this game. Totally defanged Juventus, totally defanged Cristiano Ronaldo. Ronaldo was a ball of frustration. Arturo Vidal, who used to play for Juventus, 12th minute, scores on a great header. The whole key to this goal that he scores is the fact that he gets a run at the delivery. It's great delivery, but he gets a run at it. He's on the move against a static defender who's jumping straight up in the air. So Vidal scores. It's 1-0. They get a second one. Alessandro Bastoni, central defender for Inter Milan. He hits Nicola Barella. Huge piece of space between Chiellini and his center back partner. Huge piece of space. Chiellini had been pulled to the right, marking Romelu Lukaku. And I mean, you could drive a bus through this space. It was so big. And the minute you saw this ball hit and you see Barella in, you're just kind of shocked, right? Because you're sitting here watching this. You're like, are you kidding me? This is Juventus. But their backs were aligned. They didn't shift over. They conceded space down the middle. Bastoni hit Barella. Barella took a great finish, went into the upper 90. Fantastic goal. And it was a 2-0 win for them. Now, there was a little bit of a push from Juventus. Juventus, and you're going to like this if you're a U.S. soccer fan. Juventus got a tremendous push from Weston McKennie off the bench. Now, he didn't start this game, apparently, due to an injury. McKennie comes on, gives his team a wonderful, wonderful push. And aggressiveness. Literally, right after he comes on, he gets a head on a ball that's headed right at the Inter Milan goalkeeper. But McKennie added energy. He brought an energy to a very, very stagnant midfield. It's a big win for Inter Milan. Antonio Conte gets one over on Andrea Pirlo. Pirlo, remember, in his first year as a coach, Pirlo spoke out after the game. He was very critical about the fight and effort of his team, that they did not match the fight of what Inter Milan brought on this day. And I think this is a big one for Inter Milan, because in their eyes now, they have to believe, that this is their time. And this is a moment for them that, you know, says that we can contest for the title. So now AC Milan, with their win today over Cagliari with 2 goals from Zlatan Ibrahimovic, who continues to mystify everybody, or maybe doesn't, they have 43 points. Inter now sits behind them on 40, 18 matches played. Napoli has a game in hand on 34. They came off huge win this weekend. Chucky Lozano, the Mexican international, had a goal in their win. Roma on 34 points, Juventus on 33, Atalanta on 32, and Lazio on 31. So you got a great race in Italy now with Milan, Inter, Juventus now has work to do. So it makes it, I believe, very, very interesting stuff, and a welcome sight, I think, for fans of the game now to see some better sort of races in the Premier League, in the Serie A, and in La Liga. All right, quick switch here to Major League Soccer, as, of course, Austin FC fans are always going to be very, very interested on what is going on in MLS. And, you know, there's still some concern as to this third collective bargaining agreement that owners and the league have put out there now. This is a critical period. Nobody wants a lockout, or nobody wants a shutdown or large delays here. Can't afford it, personally. So hopefully this will all get sorted out pretty quickly, and teams will get back to business here. But, you know, with the whole COVID-19 and with all the excitement that I constantly see about Austin FC, the fans, everybody is so excited and ginned up. Club has done a great job of integrating themselves in Austin, making interesting signings, whether it's front office personnel, whether it's Josh Wolf, Claudio Reyna, Cecilio Dominguez, just hitting it out of the park. And it's just such a shame to me to think that, you know, we're going to struggle again, probably getting fans in based on the vaccine and getting a grip on COVID. A lot of coaching moves going on in Major League Soccer. Phil Neville to Inter Miami. Now, I saw somebody very critical of him. Oh, you know, he got handed the job with the women with England, and, you know, critical of him. I think he's very intelligent coach, and I think you can't for a second not respect how quickly he inspired the English women's national team and getting into women's football, because the coaching is different. At the end of the day, it's still soccer, but there are things that are different, and he adjusted very well. And he listened to people very well. And he took England to the last four in the Women's World Cup. Yes, his friend is David Beckham. Yes, they were in the youth setup at Manchester United. But I think Phil Neville to enter Miami is a good one. Plus, he's going to get the support of a guy who knows Major League Soccer inside and out, with Chris Henderson of Seattle, who is now going to move to enter Miami and is done such a great job with the Seattle Sounders behind the scenes. DC United, Hernan Losada, comes from Beerschot in Belgium, the youngest manager in Major League Soccer now at 38 years of age. He is from Argentina, again, as I mentioned. So now the quote is, this is going to be high-energy soccer with and without the ball, high-energy vertical soccer for DC United, which, wow. Do they ever need to hear somebody say that? That has been some of the most boring soccer ever down there. I don't understand how it was allowed to go on year after year after year. But somebody has obviously gotten to DC, has finally changed their mind. You know, all due respect to Ben Olsen, who we all love, the fire, the passion. But the boring brand of soccer, it doesn't work in MLS anymore. It does need to be an aggressive game for the most part. And they're going to hopefully get that from Hernan Losada. But I don't know if that was healthy pressure from fans and the purpose of play and the style being so unaesthetically pleasing. But it's happened. Maybe it's the criticism that's come from the outside. LAFC is going to get Greg Vanney. TFC is going to get Chris Armas. So interesting stuff all around. A lot of coaching changes in Major League Soccer. And our first segment here is coming to an end here on Soccer Matters on the Horn, brought to you by DaspitLawAustin.com, 512-865-6710. They are bilingual. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys. They're going to give you a personalized approach. You get in an accident, car, boat, motorcycle. It's John Daspit and DaspitLawAustin.com. They are proud sponsors of this show, and we thank them for getting us on the air. So if you're in need of a personal injury attorney, or you get in an accident, think about your sport. Think about supporting a firm and a company that is supporting your game. All right, we're going to take a break. Soccer Matters here on the Horn returns. After this, we continue on. Soccer Matters here on the Horn in Austin, Texas, as we roll on here. John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm are our presenting sponsors. DaspitLawAustin.com, 512-865-6710. They are bilingual. It's not often you get an American soccer player that ends up being a captain of a team in a foreign country. It has happened, but it does not happen very, very often. Jeff Cameron is the captain of Queen's Park Rangers in the English Championship. It's the tier below the Premier League. Many of you know out there that Jeff Cameron played for Stoke City, played in Major League Soccer with Houston before going overseas after a little contentious period trying to get himself an ability to take advantage to the overseas opportunity at a time when players weren't going over quite as much. Here's part one of Jeff Cameron. You know him, I know him. He's Jeff Cameron. He joins us now. Jeff, thank you very much for being on this show from England.
Glenn, thanks for having me.
All right. So we got a lot to talk about here, and I know the fans and listeners are excited to hear you on the show. I want to take you into your current position now with Queen's Park Rangers. You are the captain, and when I look at the history of that club, how far back it goes, the players that played with it. You know, I know a lot of people in America aren't that focused on the championship because they're so focused on the Premier League, but the honor of you being captain to me is really, really something special at Queen's Park Rangers.
Yeah, it's a club that is has a lot of history with Les Ferdinand being there and so on. And it's been an honor. It's been tough. I didn't realize there's a lot of stuff off the field and on a club basis that you have to deal with on a consistent basis. But I think I'm old enough and experienced enough to deal with it. And it's been a tough season so far because we've been inconsistent and unlucky with not being able to finish our chances in games and mistakes that we've caused by ourselves, and, you know, not getting 3 points when we should get 3 points and dropping points when we have and we shouldn't. But knowing when to say certain things and when not to. And I think that just comes with experience and just kind of holding guys accountable and trying to keep the standard at a high level. And but yeah, I'm 35 years old and I still got plenty in the tank and I'm running about and enjoying it. And I take it as a challenge, and I want to do everything possible that I help the club and continue to be professional and set a professional standard.
All right. So before this interview, as the journalist that I am, I went back because I wanted to watch your game against Stoke on December 15th against your former team. So you're captaining QPR. You go out against your old team, Stoke, and you're moving well. You're playing. You're moving very well. Frankly, I thought you played excellent in midfield on this day. Was that emotional for you?
Yeah, it's actually been. I haven't lost to Stoke since I've left, which is it's always a good thing to know, like. Because when I represented Stoke and I played for the club, I know the one thing that the fans always required, and they always required hard work. No matter what, if you had a bad game or you were off with your passes, your touches, but if you grafted and you worked your butt off, like, they were going to be happy about it. And they would always applaud you and compliment you in that way. And you'd have your fans that love you and they have your fans that hate you. But at the end of the day, they're a working class club. And they like guys that with hard work, and that's always been kind of like my DNA and my game. I'm a grafter. I work hard, and I leave it all on the field. And whether you have good games or bad games, at least I know I walked off and I said, you know, I gave it my all, and that's what I'm trying to do at QPR. But it is emotional when you play against your old club because you've had so many amazing memories and memories that I had there where we were top 10 for 3 or 4 consecutive years. And then you have the low moments where, you know, you were relegated and you have the highs and lows, and those were tough moments. But at the end of the day, I wore that jersey with pride, and I have amazing amount of respect for Stoke City and them giving me the opportunity to come over here and play in the Premier League. And, but yeah, it's definitely the way it kind of ended when I left. It was difficult because the manager's coming in and they had their guys that they wanted. And, you know, fortunate enough, like, I was able, McLaren wanted me and I came over here and, you know, went from, you know, I left Stoke and had the opportunity to go to QPR, and, you know, kind of everything is history there. And, but yeah, it's always that something sweet, you know, when you're playing against your former club and you have teammates that you got on with and teammates you didn't get on, you know, with the greatest, but, you know, you're going against them and you're like, hey, this is going to be a good game today, you know.
Jeff Cameron joining us here on Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5, Daspit Law Firm. Talk about the pressure now. You've got the additional responsibility of being a captain. The game does have more pressure in England. I think that's pretty clear. That's still an area we want to improve in America is healthy pressure. Talk about that. I know the fans aren't there now, but on the other hand, the way you get judged pretty much every second you're in front of people, it has to be dealt with, right?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it comes down to, you know, your livelihood, your career. You know, at the end of the day, we all know where the world is in the situation that we're in now. But when you went from the Premier League to the Championship, your wages are cut in half. And say you have a 10-year career, if you're making X amount of money for, you know, let's say you have a 4-year deal, and 2 of those years you get relegated, and you knew that like your half your money was going to get cut, you're going to be pissed, you know, you're going to be upset. And then all of a sudden you have that on your resume and you're like, oh, next player, I'm going to go to this club, got to get a good move. And yeah, guys can go and come and go. But at the end of the day, like, there is the pressure. If you don't perform as a team and as individuals that come together as a team, you have to be held accountable. And getting relegated and getting your money cut in half and then losing, there is a consequence, and you don't want that pressure. It's tough, you know. Like, I was with it my first year at Stoke, and then obviously Mark Hughes came in and we played really, really well in 4 years consecutive top 10, and then boom, relegated the next year after. So 6 year we're relegated, and then, you know, my first year I got a taste of it for maybe a couple weeks where we were like in the bottom three, and the pressure gets on you and you don't want to make a mistake because you don't want to cost a team a goal or something like that. And then we got out of that, and then it was like, okay, pressure's off you, okay, we'll just keep going. And you kind of go back to the way you were normally playing within yourself, with your ability, with confidence. But when that pressure's on and you're 18th in the table like we are now, like, things get, you get a little nervous. And for me, being an experienced guy, I know how to deal with it and try to remain, keep the guys positive and keep doing like, hey, you know, play your game, stay confident. Don't worry about, we're going to get together. We'll get through this together by working together as a team and us changing our luck and us getting some extra bounces here and there, things will turn. We'll turn the tide. And if everybody comes together, usually that does happen. There are moments where it doesn't, where I experience where we have individuals that weren't team players that, you know, they didn't work hard in training.
So let me stop you right there. Is the current QPR team, you as the captain, are you guys together enough right now?
Yeah. Yeah. And the good addition is we've had some, you know, conversations as a team, some heartfelt moments after games and trainings, and you know, Charlie Austin coming in and him making an immediate impact already with his experience and his personality and his persona, you could say, of a guy that has, you know, played at the club before, helped QPR get promoted, and then went off and stayed in the Premier League and had a few years at Southampton and West Brom, got West Brom promoted last year. So a guy has experience and knows what it takes. And he's playing in the, you know, the high, you know, the attacking part of the field. So he's just another voice, another experienced lad that can tell the younger guys and give them advice and give them positive reinforcement and hold them accountable. They need to be held accountable, and, you know, kind of light a match under them when they need to get, you know, kicked up the butt, you know. That's a thing where in a football culture and soccer culture, that is the essence of a team that functions properly, is being able to hold people accountable and push each other, knowing that, you know, their ability's way up here and they're underperforming, but how do you get them to perform that high, and but coming together as a team? What drives players? How do you, there are players that it's hard to have a conversation with because they're more introverted than extroverted, you know, like, and it's hard to have a conversation with them, but you have to find out, you know, I've had conversations with players and like, you go to the manager, I'm like, hey, Gaff, you know, I'm trying to really get him on board or trying to get him really going. Is there anything I can do? And I pull the player aside and try to give him some advice and give some confidence. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. So you kind of learn and you figure out those things, but you learn that through your experience of playing for so long. And it just doesn't come like this overnight.
Let me stop you there. Through your lens now, where you've been, You're 35. You're not the rookie out of URI and WVU anymore, right? I'm thinking about your career, what you've seen, what you've experienced, right? Isn't it a beautiful place to be in?
It's amazing. It's crazy. I catch myself sometimes. I'm like, this is I've had a great career, and now, like, you know, and I have plenty in the tank, like I said, and I want to keep them playing as long as I can because I feel great. I feel fit. You know, I've only missed one or two games, and I just had a small little strain in my groin. But, you know, I do all the right things. I'm professional off the field. I eat right. I do all the things that I need to do to continue to keep playing, and I'm doing that. And I'm realizing if I had all this information and I was doing all this stuff when I was younger that we have now with the science, the nutrition, everything, and putting myself in these young guys' shoes that I share a locker room with, that's what I try to teach them and try to tell them. Like, you know, why are you coming in with a 400-pound pair of trainers? You know, in another year, that's going to go out of style. You're going to want to get a new pair, you know? And it's like, be smart. Like, yeah, you can have your nice things, but don't waste your money. Don't be stupid with that kind of stuff. Or, you know, like, are you should be really having McDonald's after a game or things like that. And when you're young, you don't think of these things. It's just like, it's easy, you know. But
do you worry that the game is for players is becoming a little laden and heavy towards image and brand? And you know, because I kind of feel that on the outside now. You know, I feel like I want more talk about what's going on in the field, the players, their history, the history of Jeff Cameron, where he came from, how he got to where he, and I worry sometimes that the players might be slightly more concerned about brand and imaging than they are actually about playing the game.
Yeah, I guess you could say, like, for me as a player that's getting a little older, I should be start worried about my brand and image, where these young guys, they're like starting out and like their focus should be just getting down, keep your head down and like, and just grind and make a name for yourself and let your football be, let your soccer do the talking. And I find it really interesting. And the thing is, it's good because I have a lot of, I'm sure in the dressing room with, you know, 17, 18 year old guys, and you have 19-year-olds, you have 22-year-olds, you have 25-year-olds, you have, you know, it's a very drastic, you know, difference between, you know, me being one of the older guys with Adoma and Charlie, who's 31, 34, 35, you know, guys that are experienced. And then you have guys that are super young. And these guys are acting like, some of the guys are, you know, posting pictures and we'll joke around with the Instagram, like they all wear the same gear or they all want to act like they're up here, like they're like Paul Pogba, you know, who's making 400,000 pounds a week or something ridiculous like that. And you're making not even and a 16th of that, you know? And it's like, you got to start somewhere. And that's my point. We kind of always joke around with the guys, like, you don't need that stuff. Like, and that's where it's such a change from when I started out in Houston, when, you know, I played with Brian Ching, Richard Mulrooney, Brian Mullen, Craig Weibel, Wade Barrett, Dwayne Rosario, Pat Onstad. I mean, Pat Onstad, he was ruthless. You know, like, I was coming in the dressing room and he's 41 years old, you know, and he's a grown man, you know, and I'm a young kid coming from college and I'm like, oh, like, welcome to the big boys now. Like I'm sharing dressing room with adults, with guys that have families and everything. And but I think that made me accelerate so much quicker than I could have imagined, because I had so many guys around me with so much experience that were. Well,
let's talk about that. You get drafted. It's after the two cups. So you just came right after the two cups. So you're the new guy on the block on a two-time, two-in-a-row MLS Cup champions. You got a head coach in Dominic Kinnear who he holds people as accountable as anybody will, right? With the type of players he's picked, you can realize the type of person that he's looking for as well. You got leaders strewn throughout this team everywhere, right? All the guys we just mentioned, and I'm sure we probably missed a few as well.
Yeah, Brad Davis, you can add on that.
You put Brad in there as well, who probably was the last great leader of the Dynamo. So you have to say to yourself, I mean, you couldn't have been dropped into a better team with all your raw, good ability.
Eddie's going to kill me for this.
Eddie Robinson, we got to get in there, too.
Eddie Robinson, you got to get
in there. He's my TV partner. How can I forget it?
How could I forget? I forget.
Eddie's going to crush me for that one. But you know, there you are. And when you look back now, you have to say that was a masterstroke for you and your development, because you could have ended up on any team in MLS, maybe with a bad locker room, maybe in a place that – you wouldn't 100%. Have held accountable right from the word go.
And I would have just been another number, another guy, another young guy to come in and go and not get experience, not get – but I also think it has to come down with your mentality as well. When I went into Houston, I think Dom had – we had eight rookies that came that year, or eight or nine, and I think only two or three lasted the entire year. And I was one of them. And it was interesting because a lot of the guys in the beginning, they don't really talk to you much because they know it's kind of like if eight guys, rookies coming in, there's probably going to be six going out or they won't last because it's cutthroat, but it's not as cutthroat as over here in England. But that's just because they're a little bit of ahead in development and in the business sense of it. And it's more their livelihood. But it was cutthroat in the point because it was being Dom and his staff had that kind of – it was a kind of a European environment. A lot of the guys were U.S. internationals. They were experienced, and they knew what it took to train every day and be professional and do all the right things. The guys that were older, they wouldn't have played as long as they have if they weren't professional. And – I remember my first training session and Dom put all the young guys on one team. And then he put like this, the second team, it was three team, like basically keep away possession. And I remember I looking around like, we're going to get absolutely popped here. Yeah. Like just, we won't touch the ball. And the other team was the guys that had maybe two or three years experience. And then the third team was all the veterans. And it was like the eight guys versus their veterans. And then you had a chance at playing against like the second and third team experienced guys. And that was the only time you're actually really going to touch the ball. But Dom wanted to see who would be able to stand up and fight and scrap and basically become a man. And I think Dom kind of told me, you might have to get him and ask him, but he told me, it was like, within the first day or second day of training, he knew that I was going to succeed. And it was a play where I got the ball and I nutmegged Richie Mulrooney, and he'll probably deny this, but Richard, like he's a feisty player, but like nicest guy off the pitch. Like he wouldn't hurt a fly, but he was ruthless on the pitch.
Well, and like I put the ball like a pit bull.
Yeah. And like I put the ball between his legs. And I ran around him, and I just turned around, and he just turned around and two-footed me. I went right out. And I just got up, and I played. I didn't even complain, nothing. And Dom just said, you know, like kind of said, like, you'll have a great career here.
So that's part one with Jeff Cameron. We'll come back with part two after this. By the way, on Jeff Cameron, he played at two different colleges, West Virginia University, transferred to the University of Rhode Island. He was a third-round draft choice, and with the draft coming up this week for Austin FC, it is a great opportunity in Major League Soccer, and some teams are better than others at it, in getting players that are inexpensive that can help your roster in year one. They are out there, and it's going to be up to the better teams in this league at identifying talent, undercovering those rocks, and having picks where they can enhance their roster very, very economically. Part two with Jeff Cameron coming up. Back to Soccer Matters here on the Horn in Austin, Texas. Glenn Davis here. Final segment of the show here tonight. Couple of things to catch you up on. English Premier League results. Spurs 3-1 over Sheffield United. Manchester City 4-2 over Crystal Palace. Say it ain't so. John Stones with two goals in that game. City is the team trending up now in the Premier League. and Aston Villa Everton was postponed. Bayern Munich 2-1 over Freiburg. Eintracht Frankfurt 3-1 over Schalke. But a big day again for Matthew Hoppe, the 19-year-old from California, getting a goal in his second consecutive game. He's got 4-2 games for Schalke. That was the big news there. Atalanta 0-0 with Genoa in the Italian Serie A. And then Napoli absolutely crushing Fiorentina. Chucky Lozano getting one in that game. And Napoli, well, you got to think, ranked number 3 in the table now on 34 points. Can they make a push and give a challenge to AC Milan and Inter Milan? All right, back to our interview with the captain of the championship squad, Queen's Park Rangers. He's Jeff Cameron.
Yeah, I love the accountability that players held each other to on those teams. And I remember, you know, covering the team and being at practices, and the intensity of the practice is amazing. Is there ever a chance, if the situation was right, that you might come back to Major League Soccer and finish your career in the States? I mean, is that something you want to do? Do you prefer to stay in Europe? What are you open to?
Yeah, you know, like, I'm coming towards the end of my contract at QPR, and don't know where that's going to go. But, you know, for me, playing the amount of games I have this year and how I'm feeling and where my mindset is, I know I have years left in me, and I'm proving that. I think it would have to be the right opportunity, right, and given the right team. And, you know, for me, I'm not going back to – I wouldn't go back to the MLS just to go back and, you know, put my feet up and, you know, retire. That's not my mentality. I want to go back and I want to do something. I want to perform. Now, if it was back to the Houston, that would be a pretty cool story and kind of where I started. And, you know, I went over to England and did my thing, and I want to come back and I want to continue to do my thing and, you know, help the team get back to where it was before. Yeah, that would be a great story. But at the end of the day, it would be come down to the situation of one, who would be interested, and two, if it was right for me personally, you know, and where the club was headed in the right direction. You know, are they pushing for something? Do they want to win? And, you know, I don't want to go to a team where there's no drive, essentially, because over here we do have a drive. Every team has a drive to make it to the playoffs and get to the Premier League. And, you know, I played in the Premier League. I also know what the expectations are every single game. And we have the players now at QPR to do that. We're just a little bit young and naive, and we need a little bit more experience. And that's what I'm trying to help. And there are other teams that, you know, went from the Premier League and they probably go straight back up because they're relegated and they have their experience together. So, yeah, I'm definitely open to it. Like I said, it would have to be the right decision.
Talking to Jeff Cameron here. By the way, it's a decision that includes two other people, Ariel and your son, Caleb.
Yeah.
Life obviously has changed now. Tell me about life changing now, having a son, and what that does to somebody from the perspective of being a professional athlete now having a child.
It's definitely different, you know, for sure. It's instead of being selfish throughout most of your career, you're putting someone else first, and you're doing the things for essentially for him now. And I kind of say, like, it's actually given me another drive. It's, you know, it's made me push on even more, and I'm more hungry now because I want to do the best and I want to do the best for him. And I'm at a point in my life where, like, I think if I were to have had him earlier, I think it would have been a different story, because I don't think I was right mentally, selfishly. I wasn't ready for that moment.
That does it for Soccer Matters here on the Horn in Austin, Texas. HornFM.com for the podcasts of this show. They go up right away after the program. A big thank you to John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLawAustin.com. They're the presenting sponsor of this show. They get this show on the air, 512-865-6710. Give the Daspit Law Firm a call in Austin, DaspitLawAustin.com. They're personal injury attorneys. They're going to work for you 24/7, nights and weekends, and they are bilingual. Also, producer Sam Pica, hit me up at Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock, Facebook Soccer Matters, Instagram, Glenn Davis Sock, and GlennDavisSoccer.com. That's the end of the shameless promotion tonight. Until next Monday night, I'm Glenn Davis. Hope you all have a great week as we plow forward here in 2021, the opening season in Major League Soccer.
for Austin FC.